You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another edition of the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com.
And we have Matt back from his little mini vacation.
Yes. My wife and I celebrated our 34th anniversary with a long weekend in a place called Hocking Hill State Park in southeastern Ohio. Very hilly, forested, deep ravines, waterfalls, gorgeous. It was just beautiful.
And you're in a cabin or something, right?
Yeah, we were at a B&B.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very nice.
All right. I thought I saw a cabin in your Facebook feed.
Well, part of the hotel infrastructure is a couple of pioneer cabins that date back to the 1840s.
Ooh.
That are now part of the restaurant that they have there. It was very cool.
All right.
But we've got a great show for you today. We're talking about a new website to back startups in Michigan in high tech. We're going to talk about social media and networking in a little while. We're going to talk about genomics and the biotech industry. And we're also going to talk about Detroit's powerhouse history as a manufacturing and high tech hub. But we're going to start things off talking about a new website that launches a week from today, I believe, right? It's called StartupMichigan.tech.
And why don't you introduce, we have a caller calling in, Chris Reisig.
Yes, Chris Reisig from Renaissance Venture Capital. We also have here in studio, we have Tim Burchet from Invest Detroit and a longtime business journalist here in Michigan, RJ King, talking about InvestDetroit.tech or StartupMichigan.tech. So, Chris, tell us a little bit about this website. I know that you were not among the team that developed the thing, but you are looking forward to being an enthusiastic user, right?
Yes, Matt. Thanks. And thanks for having me. So we saw the site in model form about 2 months ago. We met the team at the Michigan Israeli Business Accelerator that is sponsoring it. And we took a look at the site to give some feedback, and it's really terrific. There really isn't a place where you can go in Michigan and find a startup company or a venture capital fund and see kind of all of the relevant information about it in one place. And that's what they're putting together based on the model of this website that was created in Israel. Michigan is one of the first places to get it. And we were really impressed with the depth of information that's on that.
Anybody want to weigh in on it? Have you had a chance to take a look at it? You understand, Timber, you're from Invest Detroit to Ventures.
Ventures.
I got it this time. What do you think of that? Is that a great idea?
It's always great to have tools for the entrepreneurs in the larger community because sometimes it's very hard to navigate the ecosystem, especially if you're not deeply involved. So any place that we as investors can go and find companies, we're very collaborative in this ecosystem with deal flow. We really like to make sure everybody's seeing everything. So super collaborative. But just as another place, I think it's going to be a really big benefit to the entrepreneurs and the startups looking to connect with other founders and the funding community.
RJ, you got anything?
Yeah, it's definitely well needed. The each of these groups that are investors have their own websites. Say Michigan, the venture capitalists, the private equity firms, the angels investors, having them all in one place, and then with the startups, I think it's going to be great. I think it'll help raise the standard and continue to grow that industry.
Okay, Matt.
Well, yeah. I mean, I still remember. I always go back to when it comes to venture capital in Michigan. I go back to when I was a reporter at Mary Kramer in the early 90s, and she showed me Crane. Crane's is famous for lists, right? They always do lists. And Crane Chicago Business had this list of venture capitalists in the Chicago area. And she said, well, could we do a list like this for Detroit? And I said, well, yeah. And the great thing about it is it won't take up much room.
Because there
were like three, at that point operating in the state in the early 90s. We've come a long way since then. in terms of startup infrastructure. And it's not just money. It's also people and CEOs who are experienced in leading startups and taking over for maybe scientific discoverers who are great scientists or technologists or engineers, but maybe not so great at running companies. There's also the accountants and lawyers that service the whole startup infrastructure that are accustomed to dealing with companies of this type that maybe aren't as established or as sort of professional and polished as, you know, some of their regular clientele. And to gather all these things together in one place, I think it's a great idea. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see sort of what germinates. I mean, a part of what we do here, what a lot of people do, is letting other people in the startup infrastructure know that they exist, because they may not know where they can get something, or they may not realize they could get something here locally that they think they have to go to the coasts for.
Yeah, well, Chris and I talked about this. I interviewed him last week when I read your release on Tech Century and saw him quoted. So I just reached out to him to kind of do a deeper dive. And Chris, it's your thesis, I guess, that it's not really an internal thing. It's really aimed at showing what Michigan does to folks outside of Michigan, right?
Yeah, that's right, Mike. So one of the things we do at Renaissance is we create what we call the hot list. And the hot list is we identify the 50 or so most promising startup companies. And then we send that out, the information out, to venture funds around the country. It would make that whole process much smoother if we could be talking to a venture fund, let's say in Silicon Valley, and say, here's five companies. Here's the links to the pages of five companies where you can read about them. We may have screened them already to say these are top-notch companies, but here's a place where you can read about them and decide if you want to dig in further or maybe come out and visit and, you know, look to possibly invest in them. So this idea of having this really does help Michigan startups to get national and international exposure in a way that is visually appealing, but it's also that's pretty complete in the information it provides.
Okay. But it's also sort of an internal audience because it talks about accelerators, incubators. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with them, but I've been plugged into this industry for 25 years, so I get flooded with press releases, and so does Matt. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty familiar with what's out there. But I guess for the nouveau entrepreneur, they really don't know what resources are available in the state, and this will really help, right?
It really does. And, you know, there have been in the past lists, but they were sort of paper lists, and so they tended to be outdated pretty quickly after they went up. The idea of having a dynamic website, and if you know the challenge is going to be getting the companies that are listed here to keep their page up to date. But if that happens, you'll have this dynamic site that's always changing, that's always current, and you don't have to sort of start a process every 2 years of going around and sort of rounding everybody up again and trying to create another paper document that lists that. So, yeah, I think this will be a really good addition in that regard.
Now, I don't recall whether the Michigan Venture Capital Association is also one of the participants in this. Are they plugged into this or not?
I know that they have had good discussions. I don't know how plugged in they are, but I know they've talked to the MEBA people about this. And I would expect that those organizations will work well together on this.
All right. So, Temper, what's the current status of, you know, you work at Invest Detroit. You're familiar with sort of the investment infrastructure in Michigan. What's that like now? What's it like trying to get money if you're an entrepreneur with a business idea?
Well, you have to be fundable. So, you know, we have a certain percentage of our businesses that are fabulous and need to be supported and grown, like the local coffee shop, the local cake shop.
And, but that's not fundable.
But they're not fundable.
Right. So it's lifestyle.
Right. Right. Yeah. However, the large, high-growth, high-tech businesses that we do fund need all those supporting small businesses also. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we can come work for a great company in Michigan, but if there aren't great services and restaurants and things to do, it's hard to get quality employees to come and stay, right? Or to graduate from the university here and stay. So seeing that there are opportunities with pitch competitions, accelerators, incubators to also do some of the helping the growth of those small businesses is really important too. So seeing the whole landscape is really important. They may or may not be fundable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's grown tremendously.
That's good. And Mike, by the way, to answer your question, the startupmichigan.tech has received funding from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation and then three private foundations, the William Davidson Foundation, former Pistons owner, the Ralph C. Wilson Foundation, former owner of the Buffalo Bills, I think, and the Paul E. Singer Foundation. And also the New Economy Initiative is involved in this. So this is
– Well, you got the heavyweight foundations behind it.
Yeah, right. And those are all sort of entrepreneurial, business-oriented foundations, certainly.
Yeah.
So what is this thing – I just want to throw out a question to the group here, RJ, Temper, Chris, everybody. What does this thing have that other earlier efforts have not? What's you know, unique and different, do you
think? What's the magic sauce here, the secret sauce?
About this?
One-stop shopping.
Yeah. That's what makes it easier. So and yeah, it would particularly as you were saying, Temper, for somebody who hasn't been around this block half a dozen times already, that's important.
Yeah, it really is. Some things are very well, not purposely, but hidden or just, you know, heads down doing what you do best as an organization or a company. And I really agree with what Chris said earlier. We used to have a paper document in the city called BizGrid, and it had quite a few resources in it, but it was outdated the minute it was printed.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So this being online and dynamic and where not just the owners of the website, but also the companies that are participating have the opportunity to go in real time, update their information, it's really important.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to include, if they get press, I'm sorry, go ahead, Chris.
Well, one of the nice things too is the template that they're using, you know, comes from Startup Nation in Israel, and it's already been used for a few years. So we have a template that's already sort of proven itself out as being kind of the bugs have been worked out, and the data that's in there is what people wanted to see. So we're not creating something from scratch and then hoping that it is in a format and with the type of information that's helpful. It's already been proven out elsewhere.
Yeah, the beta work has already been done, right? So.
Right.
And that's a nice thing.
All right, we got about 2 minutes left. Now it doesn't launch. What's the official launch date? March 20th?
May 20th. May 20th? May 20th, yes, a week from today.
It feels like March. But
in fact, there's a very cool countdown clock right now at www.startupmichigan.tech. It says 7 days, 3 hours, 48 minutes, and at this moment, 13 seconds.
Okay.
And the countdown clock flips over like an old-fashioned analog clock radio, so it sort of reminds me of Groundhog Day a little bit. So.
All right. Yeah. So that'll be live in about a week, or at least on just when we get this posted, it might not be a week. So look for it to go live on May 20th, which is a Monday, all right?
Yep.
Next Monday.
Yeah, there's some kind of event, too, I think, right?
So. Yeah, at the Shinola Hotel.
Ooh, real shabby venue there.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's going to be fun.
Actually, I will be there.
Yeah, there you go. RJ, hey. RJ can report back for us here, you know. He's now an editor, but every now and then we make him a reporter, right?
Right, yeah. Well, actually, he's an author now, but we're going to talk to him about
yes,
that later.
Oh, yeah. In the final segment, we'll be talking about his new book, Detroit Engine of America. Hence, one of the reasons he's here at the show today. Although he did not bring us a copy of the book, I was looking for a copy, RJ.
We don't get it till Wednesday.
Ah, okay, great.
Okay, who's the publisher?
Momentum Books and written in Detroit.
Oh, perfect.
Cool. All right.
All right. So, Chris, any final thoughts here? We got about 45 seconds left. So, this is a fine thing, and just kind of keeps building the entrepreneurial ecosystem.
Yes, I mean, as RJ and Timber can say, and I'm sure you guys can say because you've been following it so long, states come a long way in the last 10 to 15 years. And this is just sort of another step, I think, in making this something that is a sustainably growing tech and startup ecosystem. So I think it's a good addition.
Well, and the information here for an information junkie like me is going to be fascinating too, because you've got number of companies, how fast that's growing, number of deals, how fast that's growing or not growing, trending investments, whether it's healthcare or fintech or IT, that kind of thing. It's just going to be pulling together what we used to get on a quarterly basis from like that PricewaterhouseCoopers, I think, did a quarterly report on venture investing in Michigan, but now we're going to have it in real time. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun for market watchers like me.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Chris Ryzik from the Renaissance Venture Capital Fund, thanks for being on the show today. And we still have in studio RJ King from D-Business and Temper Shea from Detroit. Right, Invest Detroit Ventures. Yes, I always get that wrong.
All right. We'll be right back soon with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. Right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And we have phoning in from parts unknown, Terry Bean from Motor City Connect. How you doing today, Terry?
Man, if I were any better, I'd be you two. How are you guys?
Can't complain.
Pretty good.
You know, Matt's back from vacation.
Doing and, just fine, but I'll get better.
Yeah. So hey, and speaking of better or different or are evolving, you have evolved into something called the MCC Club. Why don't you tell folks what that is?
I love that, man. You got that article and you nailed it with Club MCC, and every other reference has been completely dyslexic. So thank you for that. Club MCC exists, man. It's alive. It's well, and it really is born from the idea of a couple of things. One, Motor City Connect's been around for 13 years. We've been doing a lot of good stuff in and around the community. But it was never really set up to be a business or a profit center. It was set up to be a gift. And as a result, you can only focus so much time on that effort. So if you can figure out how to do it and make some money, then you can create more value through it. So that was reason, I guess I'll call it reason two. Reason one in the why it exists is because I'm noticing a very significant trend in networking, and that is we all went hog wild, got crazy on this social media stuff, started connecting with people that we know, like, and trust, and then connecting to people that they know, like, and trust, and then beyond that, you know, now we're connecting with people we have no idea who they are, and they're in different parts of the world, and I'm noting a very strong movement back to, let's connect locally. Let's do business with people that we actually are going to be able to do business with. Let's be in front of those people. So I'm seeing a kind of a resurgence in that hyper-local networking space, both from a in-real-world perspective and an online perspective. And so Club MCC totally addresses that movement.
Okay. And so a little deeper dive here. So how is it exactly going to do that?
So it does it in a couple of different ways. I've got, you know, Motor City Connect's always had a MCC live meeting. That's still the fourth Tuesday of the month in Ferndale. We're actually going to be opening a second meeting somewhere on the west side, Livonia, Walled Lake, that 275 corridor. But we've got actual private Club MCC meetings that are for members only, where they're going to be able to take a little bit deeper dive. We'll have some more time because it'll be focused on less people. So they're going to be able to learn a little bit more about each other. We go on some fun little adventures. Last month, we went down to the Opportunity Detroit tour and kind of took a deep dive look into what's going on in what I'm calling Gilbertville, because that whole tour was about what Bedrock is doing. It was cool, man. It was really cool. Next month, we're going to go out. Well, this month we're going to go to Jaffe Law, where one of our members, Jonathan Schwartz, has an office. We're going to go hang out there. And in June, we're going to Detroit Soup, where we're going to do a little bit of microfinancing for a pitch competition. So that'll happen on June 2nd, which is really cool. So we're getting people together to go do things outside of the typical networking, so you can learn about folks in a from a little different perspective. You can see them outside of their typical element, which is always fun. And then there's a private group on Facebook, and I'll be opening a private group on LinkedIn, because, you know, networking happens at the speed of business, right? So it's not enough to just wait until the next meeting to communicate. You've got to be able to communicate with folks in real time. And that's why the whole online piece has been so huge and so beneficial to networks around the globe for years.
But it sort of sounds like you're reclaiming the personal touch, because I can remember the first time I met you, I think. We were in a room full of people at Walsh College, and you were telling everybody about social media, but I thought it was kind of interesting that you were telling everybody about social media in person, you know, face-to-face. And so it sort of sounds like a return to that kind of, you know, that's about 15 years ago, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Isn't it the truth, man? And you're absolutely right, Matt, because that's what happened. We got so far away. So, you know, the more connected we are, the more disconnected we've become. So it's really about kind of alleviating that and doing that belly-to-belly that belly-to-belly thing, or at least having that kind of known entity, right? The original founding members of Club MCC are folks that I've hand-selected, and you had to meet some fairly not stringent but certain criteria to be on that list. And part of it was mindset, and part of it was like a servant sort of attitude, and part of it was you had to be out in the community so you could be coming in contact with opportunities. Don't have any hermits in this group. And then the last one was, you got to have fun, man. I don't want to deal with you if you don't have fun. That's it, right? Nobody wants that. So those were really the four pillars of who we are and what we do, and you know, who we're trying to serve is obviously the small business owner. You know, Motor City Connected began in 2006 because I was connecting with folks all over the world on LinkedIn, and I realized that none of them gave a shit about Detroit, right? And we were in 06, we were going down fast.
I remember them days, like, yes.
Scary times.
Like the beginning to the end. So, and I knew that only then it was if the entrepreneurial class didn't find a way to rise, we were all going to be in trouble for quite some time. So it was really about empowering the small business owner, the solopreneur, right, and giving them an outlet, an opportunity to get better at their craft so they could do better for themselves. So ultimately, we can do better for our community. And those still ring true to me.
So who are some of your co-founders? Who all is involved in this venture with you?
Well, let's see. Jeff Clatterbaugh of Independent Bank was the guy that really kicked me in the butt to get me started. Erica Harper over at Houndley Marketing has been instrumental in getting some of the ideas flowing and moving and helping set up the strategy. Leah McChesney, who you know, Mike, who worked with us on the IoT program doing some of the marketing, has been running a lot of the social media, and she's absolutely amazing. I mentioned Jonathan Schwartz over at Jaffe Law. He's a partner there, and he's one of the founding members. And Stephanie Puertas, the Stay in Place Social Club, is a founding member, and she's one of my favorite people on the planet. And Todd Brady from Kaida and Carlos Turner from Dwellings is a real estate professional. And I, you know, there's about 27 people, and so I feel bad for listing some of them without listing all of them. But, you know, if you want to see who's there, you can go to clubmcc.com. The majority of the folks, a couple of the new people like Walt Rush and Matt Cervone aren't on there yet, but most of the folks are on that list at clubmcc.com. And then there's a link to be able to figure out what the organization's about and who it serves and why you care. You can go take a deeper dive and look at the pricing. And then also while at clubmcc.com, you can see what's going on with the May event on May 28th in Ferndale, and you can order your lunch right there. It's kind of handy, that whole clubmcc.com. Almost like it was set up intentionally.
Yeah, go figure. I imagine there's some sort of charge to join the club.
Yeah, you know, that was part of it, man. It was I had too many people saying, stop giving away all the goodies for free, Terry Bean. So the monthly rate is $45 a month, and there's no real commitment there. And the annual rate is $450, so you effectively get 2 months for free if you want to go save some dough and you know me and like me and just want to join and throw caution to the wind. I highly encourage that. And then the reason someone might join in May as opposed to joining in June and beyond is because there's a $75 application fee to become part of this little group. But I've waived that for the early adopters who jump in May. So that's the pricing model.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. And for that, you get, what are the benefits of this here investment?
So you get the opportunity to come to some of these events. You get the opportunity to have discounts to the web training and some of the live training events I do. In fact, thus far, the live training events that are normally $40 for non-members have been free for members, so that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
You get the opportunity to be in the group. You get some promotion. We're sharing people's profiles and the like on social media. And honestly, this is weird for me to say, but one of the top benefits is being top of mind for me. I spend a bunch of time looking at social media, and I look at the people that are asking for recommendations. Maybe you're looking for an insurance person. Well, great. I'll tag Denise Mansfield in that in a heartbeat because Denise is an insurance agent inside of the group. So I'm trying to feed business and opportunities to individuals that are group members, which is always good.
Yeah. And I saw the little story that Mike in mytechnews.com did on this. And I saw the four questions that, a little plug for Mike there. And I saw the four questions that people were asking. And the one that struck me was, there was one, are you the type of person who makes things happen? Do people consider you an influencer? But what struck me was the question, are you willing to give without regard to getting? That's sort of an interesting concept. Tell me how that works.
So, and that's an important mindset question for me, right? Because ultimately, I want to deal with people who have an abundant mindset and who are willing to share the love and recognize that they are going to get as a byproduct of giving.
Not as, right? a direct transaction. Right, yeah.
Sorry.
I said go not ahead, as a direct man. Transaction, right? It's a byproduct.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, you know. For the longest time, I've been saying you don't go to networking events to sell, right? You go to networking events to network. You sell through the network, not to the network, right? And so do good, karma dictates that good gets done to you. So that's really what that mindset piece is all about.
All right, we got a little over a minute left. Why don't you give some more relevant information about? We got everybody all lathered up here, and they just got the one finger from Jessica.
Did you
a beer or something? Yeah, the good one finger. So, but anyway, why don't you give us the information again? How people can reach out to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The best way to go is club, CLUBMCC, like as in Motor City Connect, but MCC.com. And that's got all the details. It's got a link directly to my email address. And if you have questions, you can email me. My phone number ends up being on that site, too. I'm a big fan of using the phone. So call me and let's chat about it. ClubMCC.com.
Okay. Terry Bean, clubmcc.com.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment. Thanks for being with us today, Terry. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. And we have here our monthly appearance here by Tim Berchet of the Invest Detroit.
Invest Detroit Ventures.
Ventures.
See,
okay.
Now you did it, too.
Yeah,
I'm not the only one.
I always forget
one.
The third word. Yeah, it's not just Invest Detroit. I always want to
get
say
the,
that.
You get that look. You get the timber look when you miss it.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
All right. So we can't have that. So we have calling in an old friend of mine, Mike Klein. Gosh, I've known. We were just talking about. How long has it been? At least 15 or 20 years, I think I've known you, right?
Yeah, it might be more than 20 by now.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been quite a while.
Yeah. So Timber is going to talk. And now, is he a portfolio company?
Yeah, actually. Mike is CEO of Genomenon, which is one of our portfolio companies.
Sorry.
He had to do that at least once.
Yeah, I had to get that in there.
Since I got here, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
let me tell you, Genomenon has had an amazing year. But so Mike is a serial startup CEO. This is not his first rodeo, not his first entrepreneur endeavor. So I'm going to let him tell you a little bit more about that. But a couple of things happened. Last week, Genomenon was nominated and an award winner of one of the 50 companies to watch throughout the state of Michigan. Michigan celebrates small business.
Yep.
So his whole team was there. And then he's also this year a finalist for Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year.
Ooh,
that is a big deal.
Big deal.
Yeah. So we're very excited for him for that. So what Genomenon is doing is they're revolutionizing the way genetic discoveries are made, empowering personalized medicine by simplifying genome.
Hmm.
Do you know what that means?
In theory, yes. But that the life sciences is not one of my strong suits. So
we probably only know enough to make us dangerous.
Yeah,
so we're going to have to have Mike explain that
Mike
to
can
us.
Explain
that is
that,
why
yeah.
Mike is here. Mike,
yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Timber.
So to start off, why don't you just tell us, some of us in this room know your story, but the rest of the world would love to hear it. So a little bit about you and your background.
Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm a serial entrepreneur. So this is the fourth company that I have either started or run. Most of them have been the software and the IT space. So 25 years ago, I started a company called Steeplechase Software.
Ah, that's what it was.
Factory automation.
Trying to remember what that was.
So,
that was the original one, right?
We're all getting older, aren't we?
Yes.
I did a company called, in the 2000s, I did a company called Interlink Networks that was in cybersecurity. And then the last company was called Online Tech. So it was a data center and cloud computing company. And I was there from 2008 to 2015.
Yeah, my old buddy Jan.
And then I joined.
You and Jan were co-CEOs, I believe, weren't you?
That's right. Yeah, I was co-CEO with Jan up through 2015.
All right.
And now Genomenon.
And so now Genomenon. So I joined after I left Online Tech. We sold that in 2012, and then we just sold it again last year. But in 2015, when I left, you know, traveled, did the same thing most entrepreneurs do after they sell a company. I traveled the world, made sure I did all the things my wife had on her list. And then I was mentoring at the University of Michigan, and I was approached by the founders of Genomenon. They were looking for a CEO to help them with their go-to-market strategy, to help raise the money they needed to raise to really bring the company to reality. And I was just fascinated by the story, fascinated by what was going on in genomics, how it was really had the ability to impact patients with rare diseases and cancer, and fell in love with the team, fell in love with the science, fell in love with the story. And so I invested in the company and decided to join the company full-time as the CEO in the middle of 2016.
And then how'd you get hooked up with Detroit Venture?
Invest Detroit Ventures.
Why do I always blow this? Yes. Anyway, that group. How'd you get hooked up with them? So,
So Invest Detroit was actually one of the very early investors in Genomenon. I believe they were involved in Accelerate Michigan and Genomenon before I was ever involved. Genomenon had won second place, I think it was 2015 or early 2016, $100,000 prize. And then Invest Detroit Ventures had also invested in Genomenon in the later part of 2015 as part of the very early seed investors in the company, and have been participating in the additional rounds that we have had, additional investment rounds that we had in 2016, and then at the end of last year.
Yeah. So you briefly told us when you joined the company and how you joined the company. So I'm going to kind of skip past that question I had. So when did the founders, so we had actually talked earlier in the beginning segment of this particular show that about a website coming online to help entrepreneurs and just talking about how there are so many wonderful tech founders in our ecosystem, but they aren't necessarily the CEO of a company. So can you maybe explain how that happens? And they're just so good at what they do, but not the big business acumen. So what part of that role do you take besides the go-to-market and running the company day-to-day? How does it really look?
Yeah, so the two founders, we have, you know, just two phenomenal founders. Dr. Mark Keel, molecular pathologist at the University of Michigan, really had the vision behind what we're doing today. So he was spending all his time looking at patient DNA, going out and doing Google searches. And, you know, when I met him, he said, you know, I'm spending 50 hours a week doing Google searches. This is not what I got my PhD and my MD for. This is, you know, there's got to be a better way, right? And so he had this vision of where genomics could go and how we could build a genomic search engine. And he had partnered up with Steve Schwartz, our CTO, and as a founder who really had a good understanding of big data, cloud computing, and how to put together these search engine technologies to create the vision that Mark had. And so the team had gotten together 2014, licensed the technology from the University of Michigan, spun out the company, really did a good job of kind of laying the underpinnings down of what the company was. And then, you know, they kind of ran into that first-time entrepreneur's wall, right? They raised a little bit of money, started running out of money, and was looking for somebody who had experience, you know, had been there, done that before, successfully raised money, had successfully sold companies, and had the experience, the commercial experience that the team didn't have, right? We had an MD and we had a technologist, and what we really needed was somebody, the company was somebody with commercial experience and the ability to kind of take that vision that these founders had, translate it into something that investors would get excited about.
Yeah, and you've done an amazing job. It's been a phenomenal couple of years coming up to this year with lots of great things happening. So for those of us who aren't life sciences super smart,
like what me.
What exactly is a genome, and what does your product is called Mastermind? So I'll let you describe what that is. And these genomes, how are you finding things that are making a difference in people's lives?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I am not a life sciences expert, and then really, you know, it's kind of the exciting part of joining this was the opportunity to learn a lot of the things that are going on in genomics, because I am by training, you know, software, IT kind of background. And so Matt and Mike, I'm kind of with you, right, when I started two and a half years ago. But what we've been doing and what we're really going to talk about the human genome, 3.2 billion letters that make up the human genome. Every one of us have it. And it has an impact. The mutations to those, or the changes called mutations to your genome, can have an impact on rare diseases, typically seen in infants or young children, and in cancer. The common link is that between rare diseases and cancer is that these are both diseases of the DNA. And what Genomenon is doing in our role of saving babies and help cure cancer is that we're connecting the billions of dollars of genomic research that goes on every year with a patient's DNA. And we're putting that research right at doctors' fingertips. So when they pull up the patient's mutation, they can go right to the research and they can find the therapeutic information they need or the diagnostic information they need to make that decision on the patient. So you mentioned Timber Mastermind. Mastermind is a genomic search engine that actually does all this work. It's the work that connects all this genomic research, and you can look it up by a patient's mutation and go right to that research and make that call.
What sort of audience or customer base do you have for that? I mean, again, this is not my area of expertise. Are there a lot of genomic scientists out there that use your service?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. So yes, we're playing, and we actually have two customer bases. The one is where the genomic search engine is playing today is in clinical genomics labs and academic medical centers. There's about 5,000 of those all across the world right now. And they're the ones that are actually, if you go in to get your DNA tested for breast cancer, for example, or you get your DNA, your whole genome tested like at Veritas, they're the labs that are actually reading your DNA and trying to make sense of your DNA. You know, today, the cost of sequencing your whole genome has dropped to under $1,000, but the time it takes to make sense of those 3.2 billion letters in your DNA can be cost prohibitive without the tools. And that's really where we focus, is driving up the comprehensiveness and down the cost of making that interpretation. And then the other customer base that we're selling to is pharmaceutical companies that want to understand the entire genomic landscape of all the research done around the particular disease that they're building their drugs for.
So this is really all part of the sort of the future of personalized medicine, right? I mean, there will be a cancer drug just for you, or a drug for something else just for you, and it'll work better on you than anybody else in the world.
You know, Matt, that's exactly where we're going with this. Is it's all about precision medicine, right? So, you think about 25 years ago, my mom had breast cancer, and back 25 years ago, it was a standard regimen, right? Every patient went on treatment number one. If that failed, they went to treatment number two. When that failed, they went to treatment number three. And today, the way that precision medicine works is so different, right? They'll sequence your DNA, the DNA in the case of cancer, the DNA of the cancer, and then they'll pick the medication that is precisely matched to that. So they may go down the list and start with medicine number 10 or 11 on the list, because they know for that DNA sequence that this drug has an 80 or 90% probability of being successful, where maybe drugs number one or two wouldn't have that match to your DNA today.
Huh.
Has there been a time recently when Mastermind has found something that was like one in a million, or like one little piece of information was out there that helped?
You know, that's a great question, Timber. So we've worked with a company called Rady's Children's Hospital out of San Diego. And what Rady is on the forefront of using genomic sequencing for treating newborns that are born with rare diseases. And a lot of times it's difficult because newborns don't present the same way as adults do. First off, they can't talk, but the way that they show symptoms aren't necessarily the same as adults do. And so what they have been on the forefront of doing is babies that are born with rare diseases that they can't diagnose, they'll sequence their entire DNA, get all 3.2 billion letters of their DNA, and then they start sorting through to make sense of what is this telling us. They had a patient, a newborn, that was having a dozen seizures a day, ran through the sequencing, couldn't find anything. They ran through their standard interpretation process, couldn't find anything. And then they turned to the Mastermind search engine, and they plugged in those baby's mutations. And we were able to surface a single research paper. And that research paper suggests that a nutritional defect tied to that DNA and tied to the seizures. They supplemented the baby's diet, and the seizures stopped.
Wow, that's great.
And that's one of the things that, you know, gets me super excited about getting up every day, right, and going to work, is because we can have that kind of impact on not just a particular baby, but the entire family, right? How their life has been changed for the good because we were able to connect that one piece of research with that baby's mutation that changed the outcome of that baby's life.
Yes, thank you so much. That's a great story. And we are almost out of time. So I know that you have some positions open you're hiring for. So tell us where we can find those on your website. What's the address, web address?
Yeah, so it's genomenon.com. So you almost got to spell that, genomenon.com. And you can look under the careers site, and the listing of all the openings we have is there under careers.
And who wouldn't want to change a life like that, right?
There you go.
It's an exciting mission.
Thank you, Tim Boucher. Thank you, Mike Klein from Genomenon. And we're out of time in this segment. We'll be right back with R.J. King, who's going to be talking about his new book, Detroit Engine of America.
For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back in studio here in the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com in beautiful Royal Oak. And we have as our guest right now, RJ King, who is a longtime, notice I didn't use the O word, the longtime Michigan business journalist.
Yeah.
And he is now, he's got a new book out, or it's about to be out, coming out in a few days, called Detroit Engine of America. RJ, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Mike.
No problem. So tell us.
Tell us about the book. Tell us what the book's about and sort of how you came to start writing this thing.
There was a real gap in the history of Detroit. There were two large volumes, one written by Clarence Burton, the other by Silas Farmer. Both covered their chapters by topic. So one was on police and fire, and it would carry you all the way from beginning to up to 1900 and sometimes beyond. But nobody really put the whole chronological story together. So Detroit Engine of America is first chapter 1600 to 1800. So it sets it up nicely with what was going on in Europe, opening up the trade routes. And as it turned out, the French came up the St. Lawrence and founded Quebec and then Montreal and then Detroit in 1701. And then the next 10 chapters are by decade, 1800 to 1810. And just tells you what happened chronologically, obviously, the Great Fire of 1805 and how the streets were platted after that. And
Augustus Woodward, right?
Yep. And War of 1812.
Based on Washington, D.C., I heard, right, that the streets were? Or similar?
Somewhat similar. It was Paris and D.C.
Okay.
But it was his own plan.
Yeah. Well, it was instead of being a big circle, because obviously we have the river there and the Canadians on the other side of it. It was more of a semicircle going out. But Woodward Avenue runs, 30 miles or something like
mm-hmm,
that?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's amazing.
So when did Detroit really explode with growth? Because I've got a friend, my best friend from high school, now works for the U.S. Geological Survey, and he made me some copies of some Southeast Michigan maps from 1915, and Detroit was really a pretty small town in 1915. Is the 20s when it really went nuts?
Yeah, I mean, from 1930 is when they got to over a million residents, and that's, you know, made it the fourth largest city in the U.S. at that time. But, you know, Detroit, founded by the French, it was cut off from the East Coast for decades until the Erie Canal opened in 1825. And then you really started to see people come here. Detroit's the oldest city in the Midwest. And, you know,
for 300 and how many years is it now?
18.
318?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, once that Erie Canal opened, upstate New York was the stove capital of the world, but people figured pretty quickly, oh, I don't need to drag a stove with me to get to where I'm going out west. So they would wait to get to Detroit, and then we became the stove capital of the world because of that, and the people either stayed or kept going west.
Was that our first big manufacturing export, was stoves? Is that sort of started the industrialization of Detroit?
Well, before that it was hearths, but we got into shipbuilding. You know, your first three industries that sustained the population in 1701 were fishing, farming, and hunting. And then in the 1750s, we really got into shipbuilding and all different types of ships. There weren't really a lot of roads, so a lot of people were hugging the river, mm-hmm. especially the farmers, to move their crops from their farms to the city center where Detroit is today.
Hmm. And then it became a big machinist center at the turn of the 19th century, right? A lot of machinists are in town, and that's kind of the reason that we became the auto capital in part?
Yes, to an extent. We got really big into, starting in the 1840s, locomotives and rail cars, because we had so much timber and we had foundries and other things, again, that were hugging the river.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we were building hearths and then the stoves. And in the 1850s, we really got into marine engines, which a lot of not a lot of people were doing at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got into the full, you know, agricultural equipment and all those things. And that set up beautifully for the automotive industry in 1900, not only the trades themselves, but the tradespeople.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then after World War II, we were sort of the Paris of the Midwest there for a while, right?
Well, I think the Paris of the Midwest goes back to Woodward's plan.
Was it?
Yeah. After 1950, you know, that was a real, you know, incredible break in the city's growth pattern, in that, you know, they would go out into the forest and build a new plant, and then quickly it would be surrounded by neighborhoods because the workers had to walk to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you gear up for the arsenal of democracy in the late 1930s, you really, Detroit doubled in size and in some respects went over the borders. So that's why the tank plant is out in Warren. They couldn't find any land in Detroit for that at that time.
Oh, I wondered about that.
So once the war ended, basically half the demand stopped for the factories. And that's partly why some of that infrastructure is still sitting there today.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I was flipping recently through the TV on some of those sub channels that the local broadcast channels carry. And what they mostly do is carry old stuff. You know, you can watch like Gunsmoke still if you want to. I couldn't believe it. But one of the things I just stumbled upon flipping channels was a Hardy Boys short, you know, that Mickey Rooney used to do back in the 1930s.
Yep.
And one of the episodes was that the Hardy Boys, the Hardy family had the chance. They ultimately decided not to, but the Hardy family had a chance to move to what was described as, I swear to God, the most exciting city in America. And that was Detroit, because in the 1930s, we weren't doing as well as we had been in the 20s, but we were still pretty much doing okay. This wasn't a bad place to be in the Depression, right?
No, there was definitely jobs, and the auto industry was different in that you would order a car, so to speak, and then you would take it to a body shop. And then get it done that way. And then over time, it got much more dense in terms of just go buy a car at a dealership. But before then, you had coach builders all over town. And they would be outfitting fancy rail cars and things like that and homes. And so there was quite a lot of wealth here, and still is to this day.
Yeah.
You go down to the Grosse Pointe, you see those big mansions along there.
Well, what's interesting to me now is the fact that Detroit is kind of becoming something that it never has been before, in that they are taking downtown buildings that had been vacant, that had been office space for the most part, a little bit of retail, and turning them into residential. But Detroit was never really one of those places, was it, where people lived downtown? They kind of didn't. It was downtown, and then it immediately kind of became single-family detached housing. That's what it looks like anyway.
Well, that a lot of that happened in this last century, but pretty much everybody, either you had a farm or you lived downtown. So when you look at those historic photos of everybody just teeming on the streets in an afternoon and just packed and packed and packed with people, well, those people had nowhere to go. I mean, the streetcars didn't really go out that far at that time. So if you wanted to shop, you really couldn't go anywhere. You just had to walk on the sidewalk and go get your shoes or your baked goods or, you know, your dresses or your suits. And that all changed after, you know, the car and, you know, the infrastructure for the interstate highways and everything opened up, you know, after 1950.
Yeah, the Eisenhower project. So
do you go into why we never really got mass transit?
No.
They dug up the streetcar lines. Yeah, so.
Put GM buses on the road instead.
Funny thing.
Well, if you really looked at, from a pure efficiency point, what would be the most efficient thing to move people around? And that would be to give them their own vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we really focused on. And, you know, the auto industry was quite strong. And, you know, in L.A., they got taken to court and it was proven that they did try to get rid of the mass transit there. And they had already, of course, done that here. So, yeah, we're starting to get it back with the Q line and things like that. And then, you know, the Ubers and the Lyfts of the world is changing the game again.
And then we had the 67 riots, which changed everything again, right?
Yeah, I mean, people were starting to move out of Detroit. I mean, the population reached its summit in 1952 at about 1.8 million people. And then it was steadily going down because at that time you could start to afford an automobile. You could start to afford a brand new home on, you know, a clean piece of the planet, so to speak. When you're so dug in Detroit, you're living near a factory. That factory closes because it had been building armaments. You know, parents don't want their kids living next to closed
armaments
factories.
Plant, yeah.
So the 67 riots really just accelerated what was an exodus that had been going on for, you know, more than 15 years.
Now it's down around 700,000?
600 to 700, yes.
Ballpark.
And you got four living out in the suburbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So having taken such a deep dive into Detroit's history, what do you think comes next? What's our next chapter?
Well, my book goes from, you know, basically 1600 to 1900. And I have thought of waiting a couple years and doing one from 1900 through 2020. And at the end of my book, have an epilogue that looks into the future a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get the books on Wednesday at our distribution facility. And then, they're up for sale now in bulk at momentumbooks.com.
And then next week, you're going to have some sort of book signing party, if I recall, right?
Yes, we have a book launch, at the David Whitney Building.
Oh, nice.
At Park and Woodward there, and from 5 to 7 p.m. on May 23rd, a week from Thursday.
And I imagine it's just hardcover at this point, or not?
Well, the book's in the style of a journal.
Okay.
So think of, a Shinola journal. It's 7x9. It's got a nice red silk page mark ribbon, and it's hardbound. With the cover embossed right on the cover. Very durable, and it's meant to evoke like an explorer's guide to Detroit or a fieldman's guide to Detroit.
And it sells for
$29.95.
And does it? And of course, a signature comes with it if you go to the party, right?
And a stamp as well.
Ooh, yeah, there you go. So,
well, speaking of the future of Detroit, I was just looking at the rents they're getting for the apartments at the Whitney. Those are some pretty aspirational prices there, I'll tell you.
Well, it's a sign of a healthy real estate market. And what you're seeing there is a little vacancy in downtown and midtown. And so people are spreading out to Lafayette Park, Corktown, the North End. And then beyond that, those folks are going into Mexican Town, East English Village and places like that. And so some of the Mexicans are going into Lincoln Park now.
What's going to happen around Corktown with the Ford coming down there? I mean, I've heard talk of 5,000 people working in that building, and it seems a bit high. But I suppose it's possible. It's a very large building, but it's going to really transform that area, right?
Well, I think it's the whole campus would be 5,000 workers, 2,500 for Ford and 2,500 for their sort of partner companies.
Oh, okay. Got
it. They've also bought another building down there, right? Some kind of clothing, used to be a clothing factory of some sort.
It was a hosiery factory.
Yeah.
And they now have 220 plus employees in there. And then they bought the Roosevelt Warehouse, which is right next door to the train depot. So they'll have a bunch of technological activities going on there. And then they're going to build a new building as well.
And Detroit continues to evolve. And look downtown, it's all these young 20-somethings paying $2,000 a month rents in downtown Detroit, really? You know, so Who would have thought?
Yep, know? Yep. Well, that's one thing I used to talk about with my former coworkers at Cranes back in the 90s is eventually downtown real estate's going to get so cheap, somebody's going to start buying it all up. And his name was Dan Gilbert.
Yep. Which we should call it Gilbertville now,
yeah,
right?
I guess
instead of Detroit. So the U of M alumni are upset with Gilbert today. We lost our basketball coach to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we won't say anything disparaging to Dan, but
Once again, RJ, the name of the book?
Detroit, Engine of America, and MomentumBooks.com.
Available very soon at fine booksellers wherever books are sold.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for being with us today, RJ. I want to thank our other guest today, Tim Brochet from Invest Detroit.
Ventures.
Yeah, Invest Detroit the, Ventures.
Yell at you.
Mike Klein, CEO of Genomenon, who's a longtime tech industry figure here, and he's now running a very interesting sort of personalized medicine genomics play right now. Terry Bean talking about his new networking project, the Motor City Connect Club, and we opened the show talking about StartupMichigan.tech, a new website to link up startups, venture which capital, and the whole startup infrastructure,
week.
Which goes live, Monday, May 20th.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on next week.
All right. Well, we will be back next week. That'll be Monday, May 20th. We will be off Memorial Day, the 27th. We'll be back in June. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.